Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Leighton Hewitt, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Great Britain are Davis Cup by BNP Paribas champions. The last time we were able to say that, King Edward VIII was abdicating. The BBC were just starting to roll out television broadcasts on a regular basis, and World War II was still 3 years away. Fred Perry was the man in 1936, and as so often has been the case, Andy Murray has followed in dear old Fred's footsteps to bring the trophy back to Britain. My name is David Law. You're listening to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, supported by BNP Paribas, the bank for a changing world. On this edition of the show, we'll hear from Eurosport commentator Jeremy Bates, the man who gave Murray his Davis Cup by BNP Paribas debut in 2005. And we're joined from The Telegraph by The Telegraph's tennis correspondent, Simon Briggs. Simon, who would ever have thought it?
I didn't think it was going to be a story that ended this way when I remember going down to Eastbourne for GB versus Turkey and Tuna Al Tuna taking on James Ward and that sort of that seagull-centric park down there with Leon just feeling his way into the job. I mean, it's broken all records, hasn't it? I think it's the fastest rise up the divisions. It's ended with Andy recording 11-0 record in live rubbers in this campaign, which is unprecedented. Nobody's done that before. Not even McEnroe, who's got close, but played in some dead rubbers in 82. Not even Lubicic, who lost his 12th match in 2005. It's just mind-blowing.
And that seagull story from Eastbourne, it kind of just sweetens the whole thing, doesn't it? Because I was there as well. And, you know, there was something of the gallows humour about us all at the time, wasn't there?
Well, I think we enjoyed that a lot over the last week. The build-up featured some great stuff from the BBC's podcast team on the Wilderness Years. I did that piece as well. Some raunchy stories from Odessa and the brothel that the team were having to change in out there. The whole thing is so colourful. I mean, it's just a unique event. And people in the UK have maybe lost touch with it up until this season because we were lowly, weren't we? We've been lowly mostly since the 70s, despite maybe that one high-profile tie in 99. We hadn't been contending, and so it's drifted a little bit out of focus, and when you actually come back and revel in it, you see what an amazing and eccentric and stylish and strange tournament it is.
It certainly is, and it's some journey. Now, Andy Murray came out today in the position he's been in basically all year in the Davis Cup. 2-1 up, doubles job done, but he had to produce on the singles court in that fourth rubber, and boy, he did. I mean, it wasn't plain sailing. David Goffin actually put in a really good performance, I thought, but Andy Murray was too much for him.
Yeah, I thought Goffin played to his maximum, inspired by what has to be said is a phenomenally loud and very resilient crowd, because they kept on cheering for him right until the last ball was hit. Favourite moment of the match has got to be that moment when they made a 30-second wall of noise midway through the second set. He'd held for 4-3. So Andy stood there, waited for the noise to die down. He stepped up to the baseline and he served ace, service winner, ace, ace. And that is going to be in my top 10 Andy Murray moments, for sure.
Yeah, there's not much answer to that, really, is there, for an opponent? And, you know, I think we saw even a new resolve and resilience about Andy Murray today, almost like a Novak Djokovic type of resilience out there. There wasn't the level of ups and downs that we often see in his matches.
I heard a Belgian fan shout out, "Aye, Djokovic!" at one point. I'm not quite sure what I interpret from that, but I interpreted it the same way as you, and I just put it in my online match report saying, you know, it was a true reflection of a guy who was playing like Djokovic. Now, I didn't catch all the post-match interviews because they go around various broadcasts, but somebody said to me that Andy had come off court and said, "I need to learn from the way I played today because I didn't give him a single easy point." He was totally focused. He probably played one slightly shaky game early in the third, but it wasn't as if he lost that game even. It was a genuine Goffin break. So, you know, Andy, good as he is, he knows that he still can improve his consistency of focus on the court. And with the pressure and the expectation he was carrying for his nation and for his whole team, amateur sportsmen could even experience that, you know, in their own very low level. When you're playing for a team, you find more in yourself, and he did find more in himself in terms of focus, and he thinks he'll be able to take that into next season.
Reaction-wise, when he hit that glorious backhand lob, and it was perfect, I was standing behind Russell Fuller, the BBC 5 Live tennis correspondent, as he was commentating on that point, and I'd done the second set of the match, and it was just set up perfectly. He was getting pulled pillar to post, wasn't he, in the rally? Mm. And then suddenly you saw that opportunity, and it was like time stopped as that ball left his racket strings. But his reaction, he knew that was going to be a winner. He was celebrating while the ball was still in the air. And then he collapsed to the ground in a way that we've never seen before from Andy Murray. When he won the US Open, he stood there in what looked like shock. He was just stuck to the ground and staring. When he won Wimbledon, he was roaring in the direction of the press box, I seem to remember. This time, he was just overcome.
Yeah, well, for one thing, the journey is so long, isn't it? I mean, he starts in early February in Glasgow against the USA. So you've got a whole year. Things only started to open up during the French match when we saw that Canada were going out and Serbia were going out. I think that was the moment when we thought, hello, something could happen here. So that whole build-up means that, you know, he's been thinking about this moment for longer than he would ever have thought about a moment before. But also, it probably will be as big a boost as any of his Slam victories. And I think every player who's won the Davis Cup has tended to have a fantastic season next year. It's one very selfish reason why I'm very happy about this, because as a tennis correspondent, I suspect he's going to play even better in Australia than would have been the case. He's been having an interesting year because he hasn't won a slam, but he's posted his most wins he's ever posted. He's finished the highest rank he'd ever finished. Now, he's also got a big old pot, the biggest pot in tennis, to put on his mantelpiece. And that just means that he can look back and say, that was an amazing year. And for a player to be able to do that, I think that'll give him wings going into Melbourne.
That's certainly what happened to Novak Djokovic. We'll speak about that a little bit more in a moment. But first of all, let's hear from the man that first picked Andy Murray as part of the Davis Cup team when he was just a teenager, Jeremy Bates.
It's fantastic, really, because, you know, when I picked him as a junior when he was 18 in his very first match against Israel in Tel Aviv, and it was a tough tie. And, you know, sure, he had potential, he's got class, he's got ability, he had all these things, but you never know how good he's going to be at the end of the day. And now you're looking at somebody who was, you know, is two in the world, multiple Grand Slam champion, culminating in the Davis Cup today. And it's a pleasure to watch. It's a pleasure to be part of British tennis.
What was he like on that first Davis Cup trip when he was a teenager? I remember he played doubles, didn't he? Was it alongside David Sherwood? And I seem to remember him hitting a clean winner on return in the first point of the match.
You've got a great memory, because that shot stands out in my mind as well. I mean, absolutely unbelievable. And they played against Jonathan Erlich, Andy Ram, who at the time were a top five doubles team. So it's Andy's debut, David Sherwood's debut. Greg was playing singles, and we were one all after the first day, and it seemed right to put him in the team. And yeah, I mean, you would never know that he was that age, and you would never have known that you know, he was still a junior at the time. And also for David Sherwood, I mean, the two of them played, you know, a lights out match against Ehrlich and Ram. And I also remember at one point when there was a call that sort of went the wrong way, And I remember Andy going up to the umpire, and he was talking to the umpire about it, and you know, sort of debating the point, and was standing on the first step of the umpire's chair. I thought for a minute he was going to haul him out or something. I don't know. I just had to try and calm down the situation. But it was they won that match 7-6 in the fourth set, and it was astonishing.
What was he like as an individual on that trip? Because, I mean, you know, that's 10 years ago. It's a long time.
He was very respectful of the team, respectful of the competition. He worked hard during the course of the week, and he contributed like every other team member. He was he showed a lot of maturity. I mean, you wouldn't have known that he was the age that he was. And he didn't stand out from that regard. I mean, obviously Greg was playing number one singles. Greg led very well, and Greg was such a positive character. I mean, he really Tim had retired at that time, so it was very much the Greg show, if you like. And he was excellent in, because he's always trying to guide and cajole and help the younger players and everyone else who was in the team. And Andy was brilliant.
And he's moved on from there. Obviously, we know the heights he's produced in the Grand Slams. Just, I mean, somebody who's played Davis Cup and seen teams and been in charge of teams, just put into perspective what he's achieved this year to not only guide or help Great Britain to the final, Andy Murray, but to win all three rubbers, one with his brother, in the final. I think only John McEnroe and players of that ilk have done that before.
Yeah, McEnroe did it in, I think, 82. Willander did it in 83. And I mean, it doesn't need any introduction. It's an astonishing performance, really. I mean, because every tie presents a new challenge, different types of players. At no point has his level dropped. At no point has he sort of... I mean, he's been pushed. He's had some very, very tough matches. But if you look at the score lines, they all look, you know, pretty one-sided and pretty convincing.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
But they've been far from it. I think it's taken a huge emotional drain on him as well, and a mental effort, because he knows he has to deliver the 3 points, or certainly the 2 points, possibly the 3 points, you know, and it is a team effort. I get that entirely. But if Murray doesn't win two singles, there's no conversation to be had, you know, probably playing in the world group with the calibre of the teams they've played against. So, you know, I think the way he's responded to that, but it, to me, what it just shows is that when he sets his mind to something and he's determined to do it, I mean, that shows you why he wins the Slams, why he's Olympic champion, you know, why they've now won the Davis Cup, because he set his mind to it. And then nothing is going to deter him off that path. And you can see that from the moment he walks out on the court today, starting that first game. I mean, just the look on his face, the intent, the purpose. There's only one goal in mind, and that's to win. And you can't buy that quality.
Just a word on the captain. Leon Smith took over 5 years ago. He had a tie in Eastbourne when Britain stood on the brink of Division 4 of the Davis Cup, Euro-Africa Zone 3. And here they are in the final, having won the Davis Cup. A word on him.
Well, I think he's done a brilliant job. You have to give him a lot of credit. I think what people don't see, they just see the culmination of the weekend. You just see him over the course of 3 days as to him sitting on the chair and, you know, looks like he's applauding and supporting his team and having a chat. It is a phenomenally difficult job. I mean, it is exhausting. The amount of... You are a captain, not just to the players, but you're responsible for pretty much everything that goes on during the course of the week. The attention to detail, the press, the media, the dinners, the practices, the training, the doctor, absolutely everything. And Leon has committed a huge amount of time over the last 3 years of actually travelling on the tour week in, week out. Not as much as the players, but at significant chunks of time, so that he sees them when they're with their own coaches. He builds that relationship. That's what he's been able to do. And so that when he's, you know, everyone says he's made some really good decisions about the players he's picked, he's made those good decisions because he knows the players, because he knows who's in form, he knows what they're thinking, he knows where they are in their game. You know, people have good years and bad years. You know, sometimes it's very difficult to put your finger on the reasons why. But he knows that, and that's what enabled him to make those decisions. So it's a full commitment. He's done a great job.
He's done a great job. Great Britain have done a great job. It's been fun, hasn't it, to watch this this odyssey and ending up with such a triumph.
Well, it's a privilege to watch it. I'm privileged to commentate on it, to be here today to watch it. I was lucky enough to watch the Swiss play the French last year. I thought that was amazing, but this one tops it, I think.
Jeremy Bates, part of the Eurosport team. Been great to have you with us here on the Tennis Podcast.
No, thank you very much, David. I've really enjoyed it.
So there's Jeremy Bates, the man that picked Andy Murray as a teenager against Israel in that tie. He won it in the doubles and, well, the rest is history. Here he stands now as a Davis Cup champion alongside the rest of his team. And they've just been into their press conference, Simon Briggs. We've just been in there as well. And that was a really happy-looking Andy Murray. Sometimes when he's had these monumental efforts, he sometimes looks spent physically out there, and you often don't get that much out of him, I always feel, in the press conference straight afterwards. This time, I think he's just really content, and he was quite happy to share the feelings he'd gone through with us all.
Yeah, sort of a warm glow feeling rather than sort of exultant, bubbly, sort of shouty, screamy. He doesn't really do that, does he? He kind of talks slowly, whatever the situation. You know, you think he probably talks slowly if you held him up at gunpoint. You know, that kind of guy, low heartbeat, when he's not on the middle of a rally. So it was a nice and a lot of fellow feeling there between the team, and quite gentle, really. I think they are a little bit sort of mind-boggled. He said it would take a while for it to sink in. So although there was a little bit of spraying water on Leon Smith on the court, they were quite subdued in the press conference, but obviously in a very sort of gently happy sort of way.
But he did admit that's the most emotional he's ever felt in victory. He talked about how he's felt emotional. Obviously, we saw him cry at Wimbledon. We saw him cry after losing to Federer at the Australian Open. But this time was his time.
And he also said that it probably might be the case that nothing will ever top this for any of the players. Tennis, obviously, is the individual sport. Increasingly now, I think developmental studies suggest that if you try and teach it as a sport with a team element, it does contribute a lot to players' development. And as I said before, that can be true for the world number two. I really believe it. I really believe that these guys can take an awful lot from what they've done together, and they'll find things in themselves that they didn't even know they had, even players who are already legends. So sudden outburst of noise over there. I don't know what's going on. Are they opening champagne or something?
Well, the players are all being interviewed at the same time here, and that often leads to mirth, doesn't it? The team environment you talked about, and from what he was saying there, it sounds as though he wants to carry on playing Davis Cup. He seems pretty motivated by what's happened here, and certainly has put his hand up for the March tie.
Yeah, I mean, there's a specific problem with next year, because you've got Wimbledon, then Montreal, then Davis Cup, then Olympics. So if you win the game with Japan, you know, there's no chance that he or any of the other real contenders for the Olympics are going to play that second tie, which would, you know, if we beat Japan, probably be against Serbia. So that's probably going to be difficult next year. Which is going to be a one-off situation, and after that, I imagine he'll be back on it pretty quickly. And he's also got to be thinking about the Olympics and Jamie, you know, because they didn't do well in their previous Olympic outings together, but they've gone up a level. Jamie's really come on as a doubles player, and what they produced on the court throughout this run has got to be making them think, well, why can't we be a top favourite team to win medals at the Olympics in Rio?
Wow, that's some thought. A couple of final points before we sign off from the Davis Cup final here by BNP Paribas. Simon, you mentioned before we heard from Jeremy that you felt that this could give him wings for 2016. Do you think we're going to see Andy Murray Grand Slam champion again next year?
Well, I would say yes, apart from one thing, and that one thing is that Andy is... It's almost impossible to say, you know, the level that he produces, but that's also true of the bloke who keeps on beating him and the bloke who gets to every single final. So it's always hard to say he's going to win a slam when Novak Djokovic is out there, and Novak Djokovic has clearly been the better player this year and for the last 2 years, and he doesn't give an inch. So I've got a good feeling about 2016. I didn't expect 2015 to go as well as it has, obviously. Nobody could have expected it to go as well as it has, but yeah, I mean, I've got a nice hunch, but I'd never go that far in the era that he's working in. And a bit of a cop-out, wasn't it?
No, but I know what you're saying. It's very difficult to confidently nail colours to the mast, isn't it, ahead of time in this particular era, unless you're backing Novak Djokovic, who has obviously been so reliable over the last 12 months. Final point, in Britain we have something known as the BBC Sports Personality of the Year show. Now, it's something that Andy Murray won before in 2013 after he'd won Wimbledon. It's something he'll clearly be a contender for again. But I just wonder whether this team and this coach may be in line for their own awards at that occasion, because there is a Team of the Year award and there is a Coach of the Year award.
Oh yeah, well, Ladbrokes have already put out a press release saying they're paying out on this team to be Team of the Year. They're paying out bets already. So,
well, their press release has worked, hasn't it?
Yeah, so it's fair enough. But I think you know, it shows that they're pretty much nailed on. The question now is I think Andy's 6-1 for the big award. Lewis Hamilton may be ahead of him still. You've got a massive petrol head block vote which swings in at these moments. Lewis Hamilton would become the first man to win it back-to-back ever if he wins it. That's a non-tennis stat for you. I like my spotty.
What about Coach of the Year for Leon Smith?
Yeah, contender for sure. But those things aren't decided by public vote, are they? So I think there's a panel, isn't there?
No, they are decided by public vote, yeah.
Oh, okay, well, I got that one wrong. So, yeah, I mean, look, football is always going to be the sport that people know best in the audience, so you wouldn't necessarily put your house on him to do it, but yeah, he's got a shot, and he wouldn't be flattered by it, would he? He'd deserve everything he gets.
Been a lot of fun, hasn't it, this ride?
Yeah, I mean, it's just unique, and also it's nice to have an away tie in a way, because and win it as well, because we've had this wonderful run of home ties, and probably we wouldn't necessarily have got past the French quite as convincingly as we did if we had to go and play against them on a clay court. So we've been lucky with that, but yeah, it's nice to come and do it in Belgium. It's been a great crowd, great techno music booming out at every change of ends, as I'm sure you've told the listeners, and quite a unique occasion, as they always are.
No, it really has been. It's been lovely to have you with us, Simon Briggs of The Telegraph. It's been lovely to have you listening to us as well. Don't forget, Andy Murray still has one more night of tennis before he hangs up the racket for 2015. He'll be at tiebreak 10s on Saturday, the 5th of December. So next Saturday, he'll be joining Kyle Edmund, his teammate. He'll be joining David Ferrer, the world number 7. Tim Henman will be there as well at the Royal Albert Hall. It's all part of Champions Tennis, but it's a new format of tennis on Saturday, the 5th of December. Tiebreak 10s is 10 tiebreak matches. Super fast, super competitive, should be a lot of fun, and it'll be interesting to see how Andy Murray goes in that. No doubt the old competitive spirit will be out again, and he'll be trying to beat everybody. He seems to try and beat everybody no matter what he's doing. Even in the interviews, he's trying to get the last word in. We have been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. We are supported by BNP Paribas, the bank for a changing world, and we are also supported by you. Thank you for listening, and we'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently, so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing and context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.